Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Andrew. How are you? I see you are all summery. This must be the
Cool.
London tropical weather.
Yeah, exactly. It's been pretty warm. All right, let's kind of dive right in and kind of go over the I guess the events of the past week, which certainly the stuff around Powell and I guess any data, definitely some interesting stuff. So what's your big takeaways?
So the data looks like it's supporting the equity market, that everything is fine. We had higher than expected retail sales, strong CPI, I mean, relatively strong CPI number. But it's the same story. If you look under the hood, actually, the details are not that strong. So take retail sales, for instance. The consensus was actually quite pessimistic. So the beat doesn't mean much. Retail sales re really remain below trend. And you can see that because the Atlanta Fed has a GDP now cast for Q2. And they shaved down their estimate for consumption growth following the retail sales. So those guys, they are not following market expectations, are just following the data. So that made them a little bit
Which
more
part of
positive.
retail sales do you feel is showing some weakness?
So I follow the control group because it takes out
Yeah,
the more volatile and less frequent purchases, and that's the one where there was a small beat, but in real terms, we are close to zero, which is consistent with the overall consumption number we've gotten for April and May. We will get June total consumption in 2 weeks' time, and it's probably going to be close to zero, which will make for a weak GDP print. And if you look at the CPI, it's a little bit the same story. Yes, it was below expectations, so which is good for equity markets, but actually it showed demand weaknesses because yes, we got more pass-through from the tariff to goods, but the thing to remember is that the Fed expects goods prices to go up. That's not what the Fed is worried about. What the Fed is worried about is that we have a lasting impact on inflation. And you could see that, for instance, if you had contagion from tariff goods to non-tariff goods or to services, which, by the way, is one of the fears that was voiced by the FOMC, is that everything would inflate, not just that tariff good. But if you look at the data, that's not at all what happened. I mean, like used car prices deflated, used car domestic goods, no imports. You look at services, so all of the increase in non-shelter services came from medical care. Actually, two-thirds came from medical care. And this is basically set up by reimbursement rates. So it's an administered prices. If you look at the prices of discretionary spending on services like hotel, motels, airline prices, tickets, sporting event tickets, movie tickets, it all fell. I mean, airfares are down almost 10% relative to December. So this is really showing that demand is soft, and that's what's keeping prices in check. So in terms of Fed, it's pushing the data, in my view, supports those who would want to cut sooner. But in terms of growth, it signals that we're still weak. People are still worried by the policy uncertainty. And President Trump's latest tariff statement did nothing to make people less concerned about policy uncertainty.
And what I guess some of this is offset by the very strong equity market.
So yeah, I mean, we continue to have that split between equity and the real
Nice.
economy. And in fact, you know, Waller had a speech last night where he argued that based on the economy, the policy rate was actually fairly restrictive, maybe 100, 150 basis point above neutral. Very different from the rest of the FOMC, who think it's about 50 basis points above neutral. And it's funny because the FOMC tends to pay more attention to the real economy than to financial condition, but
Right.
their view is validated by the equity market. I mean, while Waller's view is validated by the economy. So I, you know, this split between economy and market, I think it could last in the fall, largely because economic time is much slower than market time. You know, market, you adjust your position, you at the speed of light, basically, you press the sun button. While the economy, things happen much more slowly. People get paid once every 2 weeks, once every month, they spend. Consumption patterns build over months.
Right.
So it takes longer
And if
for
things are
things to
bought
change.
overseas, there could be shipping time and,
100%, 100%. So it's going to take time for people to be convinced that the economy is slowing and that recovery in earnings they expect in Q3, in my view, it's not going to happen. But we won't see that until the fall. And if I'm correct, that's when we'll see valuations adjust. But meanwhile, you know, the equity market could have a really good summer.
Right. And then that, like, has been documented many times, kind of end of August, September, even October is historically quite volatile times in markets.
Right. I mean, people go back to their desk. They had a good summer, and then they have to look to start working again, look at the data, and things are not as rosy as they thought. So,
Right. Right. Then there's a lot of new central bank meetings, a lot of, so a lot going on. And so we could have a kind of quiet, kind of steady, positive risk environment for the next few weeks and see that continue. Do you see anything actually in the next month or so that could be a real risk?
NFP, but what is really interesting about the employment data, we have this slowdown in NFP, which I think is going to continue and be quite dramatic next year. But we don't have an increase in unemployment, and that's because the administration policies are reducing or weakening demand supply. Basically, no one. There's no more undocumented immigration inflows. But on top of that, the people who are undocumented and already in the US are not showing up to work because they're afraid they are going to get deported. And what's interesting is that despite this slowdown in labor supply, wage growth is not increasing. And I think this speaks to the overall weakness of the economy I was just discussing. But next year, things are going to be quite different, I think.
Right. Okay, cool. And any other big data events, anything?
So yeah, I mean, let's talk about next week before we
Fine.
get into next year.
Yeah.
So it's a blackout, a pre-FOMC blackout. And in terms of FOMC, no, as we know, nothing will happen. I think Chair Powell is also going to say, you know, decisions are made meeting by meeting based on the available evidence, but he might give hints of a September cut. You know, Nick Timiraos, the Wall Street Journal, who is the unofficial voice of the Fed, has been publishing articles where he says, well, Chair Powell is getting a little less hawkish. So, and as we've been, you know, discussing many times, there is a good case for a risk management cut in September. So Fed blackout. In terms of data, it's a bit of a quiet week. We have the S&P PMI, which are trading event more than economic event because there isn't much correlation with GDP anymore, but important for traders. So people should really look at our event monitor because it gives a really good calibration of the market impact of possible surprises. Otherwise, we have the durable goods order. And the part of the release that's the more interesting one is capital goods order because it gives you a sense of what businesses are thinking. It's a forward-looking variable. And there the consensus is quite pessimistic. So we could have a beat, but in terms of data, that's it basically. It's going to be, we hope, for a quiet summer week.
Right. Okay, great. One of the things we kind of touched on the markets call, the weekly markets call, kind of Wednesday, was kind of stablecoin, and the impact on treasuries, which we were talking about. So like a week like this, where we probably, I haven't seen the numbers of inflows into stablecoins. Do you feel like, I know you're quoting that number of like, which sounded pretty big again, BIS impact. I don't know if that's how long a period and stuff. And
So,
you seeing those, because you're assuming, I guess, the crypto bill passed, or it's
the crypto bill was just passed by the House. It was passed by the Senate last month. There was a little bit of a tussle in the House about passing it because fiscally conservative Republicans are unhappy about a lot of things, but so they were holding out the bill, but it got passed with White House intervention. I think the White House very much sees the bill as enabling stablecoin, and I agree, a very important piece of legislation. And they are hoping it will help support the dollar and the dollar for the demand for treasuries. So
Right,
that's why
keep
we've
yields
had
lower.
such strong White House support. And I know that the bill in the Senate at least was passed with bipartisan support. So that's a really important piece of legislation. But yeah, I mean, look, the BIS is a very serious shop. At the same time, this stablecoin crypto universe, it's changing by the day. So it could be that their estimate of the impact of stablecoin market cap on T-bill rates volatility, it could be that it becomes less, much less. Because the reason I think it's so impactful is because stable coins are still very mature technology, like managing liquidity is tough. And so when there are withdrawal of stable coins, there is a big liquidation of T-bills because the issuers probably haven't gotten their act together in terms of keeping enough cash to meet redemption. So one thing that the Genius Act is going to do for them, it's going to give very specific rules on what they can and cannot hold and make them hold enough liquidity so that they can meet redemption. So that could make
Right, because that's been the
yeah.
question of, certainly with Tether, it's like how much is it really? Are they? I think there was somebody saying, oh, they're like the third biggest Bitcoin holder. That's not really what a, I mean, obviously, in the size of how big it is, the numbers are not massive, but it's not one by back one by one. Now, I guess they would say, well, we'd have to have an 80% drawdown in order to start getting exposed to a big move down in, say, Bitcoin. But yeah, it's really interesting, and I think this, this understanding what the market potential impact is on stablecoins, on treasuries, because I'm just looking at 2-year T-bills now. Yeah, it's very interesting because this clearly seems to be growing, and obviously following the bill, is a big player in the market. And like we discussed on the webinar, they're looking at alternatives like tokenized money market accounts, tokenized kind of deposit accounts, like how much that's all going to impact. What does it have an impact on the dollar? Right now, most, at least the major stuff in any kind of stable coin or digital stable coin is dollar based, right? There's
Yeah.
minimal stuff on other stuff. There's some commodity kind of, but primarily it's dollar based. So if it does become a, triples in size, let's say, and the assets are like, yeah, that can become a real player in the kind of in the short-term treasury market.
Sure. I mean,
Right.
it already is. Like in 2024, purchases of T-bills by net purchases by Tether were as big as purchases of the Fidelity government money market fund.
Yeah, it says
As
bigger.
big as China, bigger, as
It
big
says
as
almost
China.
as big as China. Yeah,
Yeah,
which is
yeah,
crazy.
yeah, yeah, but.
I think you're right. I think flows in is kind of one number, but the corresponding flows out may have a much larger impact.
Yeah, it's a new product. People are still figuring out, how much they should hold. And one of the things that could help, paradoxically, is the fact that the Genius Act prevents issuers, coin issuers, from paying interest. So it means they will have a fat margin because they will get interest on T-bills, but they won't have to pay interest on coin holders. So that gives them room to hold liquidity. I mean, things that carry less interest than the T-bills, central bank
Yeah, I guess
reserves.
technically they could take interest and put that in non and be more risky investment in the interest, right?
So there is a list of what they can buy
I guess part of this thing they
they have
can't
to
put it
stick
into
to
like.
treasury. But they can, for instance, borrow reserves from banks. They are not allowed to unwind those reserves. That's it. They can also use bank deposits. So those things, give them our cash, basically. And so that could help to meet redemptions without having to liquidate the T-bills.
T-bill portfolio, yeah, it's
So
interesting.
the bill, I think, is really going to do a lot for issuers. We're going to also see more issuers, since it's not just banks that will be allowed to issue, but non-bank and even non-financial companies. There is a special procedure where the head of the, I think the secretary of the treasury, the head of the FDIC, and maybe the Fed chair have to get together and certify that issuance by this non-financial firm. So I could very well see Meta will be there, Amazon will be there. It's not going to be a threat to the financial sector
Crazy.
stability of the United States.
But I guess say Meta or Amazon, if they created their own stable coins, they still would need to partner with a bank.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. And then I guess last thing is any big takeaway from this? I think you've been pretty consistent, just to reiterate to our viewers about the Trump attempting to, it looks like he's backed off from it, but your view on all the shenanigans earlier in the week.
Okay, so my view is that President Trump, I mean, basically the market overestimates President Trump's ability to influence the FOMC. So first of all, President Trump next year at most will have two seats on the two openings, probably one, because it's likely that Chair Powell is going to stay on as governor once his term expires. So it's unclear how many FOMC members would vote for super loose monetary policies, which is what President Trump is currently asking. At most two, I think one, but definitely not a majority. But even before we get there, I mean, this week, rumors were clearly a trial balloon to see market reaction. I think legally it's not feasible to dismiss Chair Powell, who is a lawyer by training and has said, if necessary, will use his own money to fight his dismissal in court. Also, the last time President Trump tried to mention the risk of firing Powell, which was under his first mandate, the Fed or someone, an anonymous source, leaked to the media that the Fed would react by electing the FOMC, the head of the FOMC, who is not picked by the president but elected by FOMC members, that they would elect Powell, that Powell would stay on as governor and would become the head of the FOMC. So I just don't think it's feasible for President Trump to get the Fed to cut interest rates by 100, 150 basis points below what a Taylor rule would
And
say.
then just to understand, so if he so there's this Powell step down, and then the board of governors together will vote for the new, but obviously they'll take on board who the president is recommending. Is that
So there are two roles. One is chair of the Federal Reserve, and one is head of the FOMC, the rate setting committee of the Federal Reserve System. The first one, President Trump gets to choose, but he needs to get his person confirmed by the Senate. The second one, he doesn't choose. It's actually the person who becomes the head of the FOMC is elected by FOMC members. I think it was in 2019, where there was this big conflict between President Trump, the first one, and the Fed. Someone, presumably from the Fed, leaked that even if President Trump dismissed Chair Powell, the FOMC, he would stay on as governor, and the FOMC would elect him as its head. We have a formidable institution here, very well entrenched, protected by law. And the law cannot be changed without a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, meaning
60.
two-thirds, 60,
Oh, yeah.
sorry, 60. And right now, the Republicans have 53 seats. And what was interesting this week is that four Republican senators spoke up in against dismissing Chair Powell. So we have an institution which has a formidable adversary, but has very strong defense. And I think it's really going to be difficult
Right.
to
Okay.
overcome.
So in general, if there is more kind of issues around Trump raising it again, you kind of would recommend for people to fade those moves at least till May.
100%. I think the market is pricing far too much next year in view of the risk of the inflation risk. And also, a good Fed chair, and I suspect Secretary Bessent has actually done that a number of times, would tell President Trump that if he cuts interest rates 100 or 200 basis points, the 10-year will increase, bond yields will increase so much that it will have much tighter financial conditions, possibly strong, deep instability, not to say crisis in the bond market, and that will end up tightening financial condition by much, much more than if he let the FOMC get on with its work.
Right. Okay. Okay, cool. Awesome. So for that, kind of wish everyone, I guess, a good weekend. Again, timestamp. This is kind of Friday afternoon, London time. Wish you a great weekend as well. And yeah, everyone speak next week.
Thank you, Andrew. Likewise, good luck,
Thanks.
everybody.
Bye.